God, I just can't. I just don't understand Zappa. I don't like it. It just sounds like noise to me. And in stepped the man who's on the phone with me right now, the one and only Eric James Peterson, to say, you just haven't heard the right Zappa. You just don't know what you're talking about. And I'm going to school you. And sure enough, a week later, maybe even less than a week later, Eric James Peterson, devil in my ear, comes in with a burn CD of, sorry, Frank, sorry, Zappa Estate, You Can't Do That on Stage Anymore, volume, I don't know, it's like volume two, volume four?
It's two.
And it's in Helsinki. And he's like, just listen to this from beginning to end. And I was like, fine, whatever. You know, I trust you. You're a nice guy. I could probably trust you. And I remember taking the bus home and I put that CD in. I couldn't take it out. I couldn't take it out for weeks. I just listened to that whole set over and over again. And I was like, well, you know, here's why sometimes it's good to open your mouth and say some stupid things that you know, to admit your ignorance, or at least try and be, you know, kind of defiantly stupid and ignorant. And it totally worked out for me. So thank you, Eric James Peterson, who's here with us right now.
You're welcome. Broadway the hard way.
Yes.
You gotta you gotta listen to a few hours of tape to get some good stuff, you know?
You really do. You have to open your mind. You know?
It's true. I mean, you know.
And that's something you're really good at as a person. Let's introduce you first. Eric James Peterson. He's here with us. He's here from California. So just forgive him. And let's ask him, make sure he's not burning up. You're still safe and indoors, I'm assuming, with an air purifier.
Yeah. I'm indoors. I'm in San Jose currently. If anyone's been to the South Bay, I live in Santa Cruz, which is closer to the coast, but about 30 miles to the east, you get into San Jose and the South Bay, you know, of California, and it's quite hazy. I don't think I've ever seen haze like there is out in the South Bay area today, which is pretty vast, you know.
Yeah.
San Jose's a sprawling area to the south of San Francisco and Oakland, kind of where it makes a little triangle underneath, and it's just really socked in with haze and smoke. It's really difficult to breathe, and everything you're hearing about it is true. It's a gnarly post-apocalyptic angry red planet outside,
and it doesn't usually the smoke doesn't usually come up that way, right? That's not a common occurrence.
No, not at all. It's been, you know, the last couple of years, as the wildfires have gotten closer to, you know, the south, like Gilroy and Monterey, as they have this year, that's what's been the difference. They're normally in the outlying eastern hills areas, the high desert out by Sacramento or down south. You know, the L.A. area gets them far more often than the northern coast and central coast do. So it has been unusual, all the haze, and it is not as unique this year.
Are you getting like a headache? Like, do you get, you know, is it, what, how does it affect you?
Your eyes feel like they're scorching. Your retina are burning, like you can light matches with your eyes. It makes your eyes burn, and it's a heavy breath.
Wow.
If you were out jogging, I would assume. I'm still a smoker, so
yeah.
I got the double whammy when I go outside. I couldn't imagine, like, if you were doing super physical work, construction, something out in the open like that's got to be kind of rough. But hey, you're supposed to be wearing a mask,
right? Yeah. So, but the mask doesn't protect you. It mask only protects other people from you. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's, you know, you just gotta smoke through a ventilator. What you gotta get here, we'll build this right now. So we'll just get one of those, like, really intense ventilator things that has, like, the refillable cones, right?
You know, right, the little bladder thing.
Yeah, and then we'll cut, like, just a perfect Marlboro size. You still smoke Marlboros?
Yes. So
we'll get, like, just a perfect Marlboro die cut into that thing, and just, like, right down the center, you know, so it's almost like your nose.
Right.
Unless you're just smoking indoors right now, which maybe that's what you're doing.
Oh, No, I can't do that. I'm Californian enough not to do that.
Yeah, that's good. You've been schooled. You've been schooled. But it also is bad. So we're going to work on this. If anybody wants to has a wood shop background or a mask modification background, help us help Eric James Peterson. Yeah, and I've been smoking again too. I hate to admit, I haven't been smoking a lot. Reliving old times.
You were a heavy smoker there for a minute, as I recall, and then you quit because you had children.
Yeah,
whom I hope are well.
Yes, children are beautiful and amazing, and I hope the same for you.
And she got arrested. She got arrested in the Kenosha curfew.
Oh no! Okay,
the whole Kenosha, Wisconsin curfew thing.
Yeah, this is another Eric James Peterson connection. We're just gonna introduce you slowly because I think you'll probably be a regular on this dumb show of mine. So Eric is from Kenosha, which is now on everybody's radar for events of the last month. And what was Kenosha on the radar for before all the riots and the what's his name?
Well, I think the last time they were on the radar was in 1988. There was an auto workers union rally, and that was the whole coming out of Reagan into the Chrysler Daimler era when they were pushing that. And I'm 15 at the time, but I found a clip of this. The last time they were on the map was when that factory and all that steelwork there was going to hell, and the mayor claimed to inadvertently, emceeing, if you will, or introducing Jesse Jackson at this rally, referred to him as a spear chucker.
Whoa!
And it just, everything blew up, and it all turned into a really bad. So I guess the moral to the story is that Jesse Jackson returned there, 32-some years later, to the same kind of stuff that's been going on in Kenosha, Wisconsin, pretty much all of our lives. Because once that, or anyone related to Kenosha, Wisconsin, somehow, once that big industry went away, then it was kind of odd. It led its way to a really fertile punk rock and, as you know, industrial scene.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, what was the Kenosha music scene like growing up? Introduce your background,
kind of. It's kind of broad stroke, but I'll just say Chicago and Milwaukee's music scenes kind of met in the middle because of the money you could afford to live there. So it's kind of like if a more musical artist, bohemian culture, an Alphabet City type arrangement where, the artists used to live in closer proximity to downtowns of major metros. They started moving out so they could travel back to the metro and live a little cheaply. That's kind of where Kenosha and its music scene fell in, because it was much more affordable for people from either Milwaukee or Chicago at the time, the mid-90s into the 2000s. That's kind of what Kenosha was all about. That actually culminated in now what is one of the satanic industrial dance music thing that was going on in Kenosha eventually became like a Christian rock epicenter with one of those bigger bands, namely Skillet, really popular.
And so Skillet went from
Kenosha,
they went from a satanic band to Christian.
Well,
dude, that's like ICP, right? That's ICP.
From the ashes of.
Yeah,
that's basically that was the Kenosha music scene back then. A lot of hardcore punk, and then a lot of industrial dance music, a la the Electric Hellfire Club. And
is that the Lord's revenge on Kenosha for fostering the Electric Hellfire Club?
The Jacob Blake incident.
Well, I was thinking more like the Christian rock scene. Yeah. Yeah, because right. now I want to see what's analogous. So why do you think Kenosha? I mean Thomas Thorne pretty well. You were in the Electric Hellfire Club, which for people who don't know, you can go look them up. And I mean there's so many different awesome songs you could get into. The most famous song is probably Mr. 44, right? Very topical right now. So give us a background for maybe listeners who don't know. We're talking to Eric James Peterson, who was One of the drummers, a former drummer for the Electric Hellfire Club. Just give us a rundown of you know, what the band was and how you got involved in it.
I was a teenager at the early formations. I was super young. I was 17. And coming and going from Kenosha, Wisconsin, to where my mother had moved out here, South Bay. Okay, you know, that's my connection to where I live now. And which my mother still lives nearby and all that business. So settle in one place, settle in the other. They initially started as a, you know, a kind of side project to My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult and Ministry, Chicago Wax Tracks style industrial bands. And Thomas Thorne was a member of that, you know, that whole thing. And he was starting his own project with people that I had known and grown up with, namely Shane Lassen, who would then go on to pass away, and a whole different story in the history of the Hellfire Club there. But he was my age. And Ron, the guitar player, owned a record store that I used to hang out at, and that's where I got all the Zappa stuff early. And the whole, you know, when you get on the musical upbringings or formative years, that's kind of where I got them at. And those two told Thomas, we need to check out this, you know, this drummer, because he's super open to, even at 17, I really was getting into electronic stuff and, you know, doing, I just didn't want to sit at a drum kit and play punk rock, which was kind of the other alternative. But I already knew that I'd be moving back to the Midwest. I didn't want to spend my teenage years in California. I don't know, man, you know,
yeah.
California's.
So just like breaking things out, breaking things out right here. Was like the difference between being a punk rock drummer and a, like, you know, I don't know what you would consider yourself as a different kind of drummer now, or maybe you have all these different styles, but is a punk rock drummer just being a bad drummer? Or is that like, because it almost sounded like a diss, right?
At the time there was a difference for sure, because, you know, everyone was into their own little things, and there was no social media to get your bravado on and braggadocio. So that stuff, you know, showed up in different, it was a little more competitive and, you know, different landscape and music back then, particularly as it broke by genre, because, you know, every genre had its little bit of relevance. And I think at the time, yeah, I was thinking of it in those terms. I was doing something considerably more innovative or, you know, unique, because I was playing electronics and punk rock drummers were just playing four on the floor. But now I've learned, you know, years and years later, it takes a little bit of something to play a four on the floor convincingly now, you know. I try to be melodic, but it's always kind of been a struggle for me to stay in the pocket without getting too crazy and out there.
Yeah. So
Zappa, I want it to be busy and crazy and
right.
Soul, you know, zany.
And so these crazy satanic industrial rockers, and, you know, kind of dance club party people, you audition for them, and they're like, who is this monster, you know, drummer at 17? Yeah. Sounds like Keith Moon and Neil Peart had a baby. And
we just kind of broke that down into how that would relate to someone standing up, or, and that opened a whole different, I started looking at that from the point of view of a guitar player, because of where those guys wanted to put me on stage was kind of where a guitar player would be. So I started going back through the, you know, the catalogs of, you know, shredder type guitar players, or guys who had a little bit of attitude, you know, they didn't just kind of stand there and do their thing. So like my, you know, the Yngwie Malmsteens and the Michael Schenkers and all the, you know, the hair metal bands and all that kind of had a lot to do with, particularly the way the Hellfire Club looked and how it operated. So it was sitting there and dissecting, you know, different drummers. Don't let Thomas Thorne fool you. There's Neil Peart licks all over that shit. They're all over it. I specifically remember the acid test. I was like, hey, that's, even Ron concurred. He's like, that's a total nihilism right there. That whole, the alternative hi-hats and all, the alternating, you know, pitches of hi-hats. So straight out of Subdivision.
Yeah.
Straight off in.
Yeah. Thomas Thorne, Reverend Thomas Thorne, if you're listening, we know you secretly love Rush. We forgive you. We forgive you for lying about it on Facebook. We know
Lakeside Park.
We know, yeah, you we know you're ready for some Lakeside Park. Willows in the breeze. Woo! So wait, so I didn't know that actually, that your setup at Hellfire Club was a stand up. So you didn't have a throne to sit on.
No, I stood up and played.
Wow.
Go look on YouTube at some of those older live stuff. It's all electronic. There's no acoustic drums or cymbals or any of that. It was definitely a different approach in the mid-90s. It wasn't digital. You know, there's these analog to digital drum machines. We were just basically taking out a hip-hop act or a soundscape type outfit would have been using at the time and try to make it more modular. You know, be able to break it down and set it up pretty easily and, you know, kind of a good, again, like a guitar player.
So yeah.
It has its sonic limitations at the time, for sure, compared to electronic drums now.
Right. Yeah, and it must have felt good, I guess, to once you could sit down again, I would guess, because there has to be a back-breaking element to standing up and doing the drums all the time. I mean, there's a reason you sit down, right?
Yeah, it was way more athletic and took. I was much more adept at it in my, my younger years. I don't know if I could approach playing drums live in that manner again. It was way more athletic.
Well, and with COVID times, you can't even play live at all. You're trapped.
Well, I mean, and that's where I'm at now. Another piece of the puzzle, maybe we'll discuss at a different time, is the venue, all that stuff we're into currently. Since you've seen me last, it did take a political turn with me because I became much like you, I tried my hand at, owning a business, trying to, get some of that going in my life. And it's hard. That's really a lot more difficult than I ever could have imagined.
It's crazy. It's like
the last spot. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And I do want to talk about that. Let's talk about that in the second half. But first, you brought us a song. Do you want to go ahead and introduce it for people?
Oh, sure. That's we have some Zappa. I gotta bring to him. We're going all the way back to I believe we got the first record, right? The freak out version, or are we gonna?
I got the first, yeah, not the live one. I got the one off of.
That's the freak out version. So this is Trouble Every Day by Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, and it's arguably the definitive version, as you know, for Zappa. Head. There's a lot of different versions, a lot of different songs, and this is a song that can be used in any era, in any generation, for till the end of time, in Zappa's own words. So just listen to how the lyrics flow and the cadence, and you'll get what I'm saying. It's very topical and certainly applies to what we're dealing with today.
Here we go. Talking to Eric James Peterson, late of the Electric Hellfire Club and many other cool projects. This is Trouble Every Day by Frank Zappa and the Mothers.
Well, I'm about to get upset watching my TV, checking out the news. I tell my eyeballs fail to see. I mean, to say that every day is just another rotten mess. And when it's gonna change, my friend, is anybody's guess. So I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I'll go to praying every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day. Wednesday I watched a riot, I seen the cops out on the street. Watched them throwing rocks and stuff and choking in the heat. Listen to reports about the whiskey passing around. Seen the smoke and fire and the market burning down. Watch while everybody on your street would take a turn. The stomping, smashing, bashing, crashing, slashing, busting, burn. And I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I'd go to prayer every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day. Well, you can cool it, you can heat it, 'cause baby, I don't need it. Take your TV tube and eat it. cheated and all that phony stuff on sports and all the unconfirmed reports. You know, I watched that rotten box until my head began to hurt from checking out the way the newsmen say they get the dirt before the guys on channel so-and-so. And further they assert that any show they'll interrupt could bring you news if it comes up. They say that if the place blows up, they will be the first to tell. Cause the boys they got downtown are working hard and doing swell. And if anybody gets the news before it hits the street, they say that no one blabs it faster, their coverage can't be beat. And if another woman driver gets machine gun from a seat, they'll send some joker with a brownie and you'll see it all complete. So I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I go to praying every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day. Hey, you know something, people? I'm not black, but there's a whole lot of times I wish I could say I'm not white. Well, I've seen the fires burning and the local people turning on the merchants and the shops who used to sell their brooms and mops and every other household item. Watch a mob just turn and bite them, and they say it served them right because a few of them were white. And it's the same across the nation, black and white discrimination. Yeah, and you can't understand me and all that other jazz they hand me in the papers and TV and all that mass stupidity that seems to grow more every day. These time you hear something would say, he wants to go and do you in, cause the color of your skin just don't appeal to him, no matter if it's black or white, because he's out for blood tonight. To sit around at home and watch this thing begin, but I'll bet there won't be many live to see it really end. Cause a fire in the street ain't like a fire in the heart, and in the eyes of all these people, don't you know that this could start on any street in any town, in any state, if any clown decides that now's the time to fight for some ideal he thinks is right. And if a million more agree, there ain't no great society, as it applies to you and me. Our country isn't free, and the law refused to see if all that you can ever be is just a lousy janitor. And unless your uncle owns the store, you know that five and every four just won't amount to nothing more. They'll watch the rats go across the floor and make up songs about being poor. Blow your harmonica, son.
Hi, Phil Andrews here, host of Cats in Our Laps. Each Tuesday afternoon, you'll want to stay close to your radio wherever you may be. For me, it's Shop Project time, beginning with music from The Warm Climbs, Robert Ambrose's Rhythm Connection, and then out of nowhere, music of every sort imaginable and tasty, presented by Peter Robinson. To their good company, my projects proceed contentedly, and yours will too. Altogether 1 to 5 on Tuesday afternoons on KPTZ.
Okay, breaking news. Antifa did not set any of the forest fires, and let's just want to make sure and get that clear. If we can use every broadcast element to share that I am a founding member of Antifa. Actually, I started Antifa back in World War II, and I'm also a founding member of Anonymous, and I did not start, nor did I order my people, my Antipa people, to start those forest fires. Eric James Peterson, who's with me now, will confirm this because you're my secretary.
Absolutely. Ministry of Propaganda.
Ministry. I got to see Ministry at 2 years ago now. I saw Old Al. I hadn't seen Old Al yet. We're waving the Antifa flag. And, Death Grips opened for them. Have you heard those guys?
Oh, yeah. Zach Hill.
Oh, man. It was such a trip. I actually, spent all my energy in the Death Grips pit. Which was just this locked in, spasm of people. And then Ministry came out and I Thieves came on and I was just I was losing my mind. But then I was oh my God, I am actually old now. I can't just do this the whole time. And meanwhile, Al is I am the Antifa. And I was I kind of like this, subjectively maybe, but it just didn't, I hate to say it, I missed Junkie Al. I missed Junkie Al a little bit. I was kind of man, when you were thin and
Diaper Al.
Yeah, basically.
Diaper wearing Al.
And just crushing my eardrums with walls of sound, aggressive, mean sound. I don't know. It was still cool.
Yeah.
Still felt like it was fun to see. And he is also the leader of Antifa. Al Jorgensen is. I think that's correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
along with a couple of old ticket agency employees.
Right. Yeah.
I think there was a. They show up in the weirdest places.
Yeah.
The Antifa leader.
They're everywhere.
So to be taken seriously.
So tell us about your venue. Tell us about give us the history of your music venue that you had going on that currently can't be going on, but walk us through that.
I mean, we have to create controversies for ourselves amongst each other now. It's gotten to that point.
Mm.
Where now we're taking it out on each other on the internet. Because we can't have shows.
Yeah.
So
no.
Now we have, God, we're so bored. It's unbelievable. But the brief story of the Ritz. So the Ritz is a venue in downtown San Jose. It's the only venue in San Jose, which, by the way, I got to preface that, give it a little bit of information. San Jose is now the second largest city in California behind Los Angeles. San Diego held that distinction for many, many decades, but San Jose is now rapidly approaching 2 million people.
Why do you think that is? Is it because of San Francisco being such a boom?
Yeah. Well, there's only so much room in San Francisco. The whole 49er thing coincides with the miners and all that. But San Francisco is 49 square miles. It's only 7 miles, going around water on each side of it. So only so many people can live in San Francisco. And I think that because it appears to kind of be the New York of the West, it has this infinite amount of space that you can live in, and it's just not that way. It's packed to the gills, and it's in Lisa Lincoln's words,
double L,
she might be out there somewhere. She wouldn't move back to San Francisco, which is her home. She wouldn't move there, until they got their stuff together, because that city's a mess. It really is a violent, dangerous, overpopulated mess of a place, And the dangerous, violent people aren't necessarily the people living on the street. These are people believing they're protecting something, or
right,
that whole side of what's happening. Because there, don't make no mistake, there's a lot of affluent in San Francisco up in them dar hills.
Yeah,
they're not gonna give that up quietly. So
yeah, they're buying 400 square foot apartments for millions of dollars.
Absolutely.
It's not
one bedroom apartments are $5,000. It's not cool at all. And there's all kinds of undeveloped stuff down here in San Jose, the east side of San Jose, and Gilroy and those parts south. It's still, there's so much undeveloped land. It just makes sense. It's like any other metro with its south end. It would seem much in the case of Seattle with, Rainier Beach and Beacon Hill and all those, Othello and all that. It's all plenty of room to develop there to the south of Seattle. Same applies here. The South Bay is vast. And I think that's why there's so many people in San Jose specifically now. A lot of jobs there, too, in terms of they're trying to bring back tech manufacturing, you know. Still got to make the silicon chip and the board and all that kind of stuff. So as phones continue to sell, a lot of that stuff's just being done here.
So Silicon Valley all over again, like actual, not building stuff in China, but building it here. And maybe partially that's because of COVID too.
Yes.
Well, so
that and Tesla.
Oh God!
You know, electric automobile stuff is here too.
Yeah. Yep. Elon and Grimes. We should talk about that. No, let's not talk about them.
Having numbered children.
Yes.
Anyway, I mean, and as they relate to the rich, it's kind of they don't. We took no venture capital. We stayed away from all the, you know, the Apple yearly events for their Worldwide Developer Conference, and then subsequently Google and Seagate and NVIDIA, and the list goes on and on and on. We have a little chunk of downtown that was, there was another person involved there who had a little more celebrity in the extreme athletic, you know, skater thing from back in the 80s, and he was kind of the impetus to all of this. He had a club going here for many, many years that was, you know, a little punk rock, death rock, dance, DJ night kind of club called the Blank Club. And he wanted to have a venue, man. He wanted to do bands and do national acts that couldn't be done in this other little room kind of nestled away in an alley of San Jose. So we got pretty much what is arguably the coolest little corner. It used to be owned by Pete Escovedo and Sheila E., this little venue, and it's an old theater built back in the 20s.
Wait, so Sheila E. used to own the Ritz?
Yeah, the building.
Oh.
It used to be their venue.
No wonder you bought this. That's got magic in it. Oh, man.
Okay, well, yeah, we're still using some of their same gear.
Oh, that's so rad.
That's how poor we were.
Well, yeah, poor, but you know, but rich in Sheila E. gear.
Oh, yeah. When you get the vibe of this venue, it's, you know, there's, it harkens back to the old black box Chicago industrial days. It's what this venue feels like. But, you know, it's certainly calendar is more along the lines of a place like Numo's, if you will.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Spaceland in L.A. And it has a pretty, an indie calendar going on. But it's peppered with all kinds of different stuff. Wrestling.
Right. You got pro wrestling. I remember.
We do wrestling. We do. It's quite a... That is like Fight Club meets Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's got to be seen to be appreciated.
What's the outfit called? What's the outfit called?
That's the Underground Wrestling Alliance, UGWA, UGWA.com.
Right. Yeah, so
check it out.
There's no other venues like the Ritz in San Jose, right?
No, we're the only medium-sized, you know, 600-seat national venue. And now, after COVID, it would appear that we'll be maybe one of three in the entire Bay Area.
Wow.
Oakland will have its Metro Theater Opera House over there and the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. Otherwise, Slim's closed. There's some iconic San Francisco venues have closed over the course of this pandemic.
Were you able to reopen at any time during this, or have you? Has the Ritz been shut since March?
Shut since March.
Wow.
I'm proud to say we were about a week ahead of any sort of order, any sort of shelter in place, or, you know, we didn't need to have ABC come by and tell us to draw lines. We just did it.
Yeah.
I think that community knows fully well you can't be in each other's face and do this. So we're just gonna, you know, that's a long discussion too, the whole PPP nightmare. And,
oh yeah.
You know, our employees getting their unemployment. I could say one thing, and that's the landlord of that particular block in San Jose is a maniac. He's a good man.
Oh, good. Good. You don't always hear these happy stories.
No, he's holding it down for that one little strip of area in downtown San Jose is, it's old. It's the last of the art district, is that, if you can call it that. There's maybe four or five businesses that cater to that subculture in San Jose and are all right there. And I think that landlord understands its importance in the community.
Oh, that's so cool.
That has a lot. The controversy I was talking about earlier, we've made our own mural controversies and people doing murals up and down the street. We've made it a competitive thing. So it's actually got a little life down there where I don't think it had it for quite a while. Because we did, that area was, you know, after the George Floyd incident, which is a whole other topic. That's got pretty shady down there, you know. So downtown San Jose can be a pretty rough place from time to time. And after, you know, the couple weeks after the George Floyd incident, it was not pretty down there. Mm. A lot of broken windows, a lot of fists getting swung and all that.
Mm.
Pretty rough.
Yeah.
But we've made it, and we will make it. We'll get a calendar going again. We'll rock and roll is always the proverbial damsel in distress. So we'll have to just get back to saving that lady, you know.
Yeah.
Slowly cut her rope off and get local bands in there and eventually start touring acts again.
Well, it's just super rad that your landlord has been supportive, you know, because it's literally, that is not a common story.
Oh, no, not at all.
I've heard of landlords, like, you know, forcing their tenants to pay them out of PPP money, which is illegal, you know. It's yes. Like, but who, what are you going to do? Because when you have a landlord, you are just beholden. You're not in a power position, you know.
No.
I've known landlords who've been, you know, abused for sure. But like, for the most part, that relationship is one-sided. And so to have somebody in that area who says, I need my people, like, I can't just kick out, you know, or harangue or threaten and extort the people that actually, like, give me the ability to earn passive income. I need to be on good terms with them, and I need to do the best I can and maybe take some hits, you know, to support. It's just like what people should be doing for restaurants, right? And for any of these businesses.
Yes.
That being said, I also feel like the best way forward is to for people to not just defer the rent, but to forgive it, you know, completely for those months. But that's another conversation that we'll see if we get to that point. But
yeah, I'm on your side there with that.
Yeah, as you should be.
I'm much more leaning in that direction. Yeah.
Small business owner.
And I believe our landlord is too. I believe the owner of that property, those properties. He went from point A to that really quick. It didn't take him very long to, you know, to say that this is really important to the community. Whatever it takes, we're gonna handle it. Bear with us, you know. Just make sure your windows are boarded up, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, we've been talking to Eric James Peterson. Former drummer for the Electric Hellfire Club, the amazing person who got me into Frank Zappa, co-owner of the Ritz with Lisa Lincoln, double L, generally cool person who we'll have back on Filter again soon. Thank you for being with us, Eric. Do you any shout outs before we say goodbye?
Yeah, it's going around through the metal community to Riley Gale, who just passed away from Power Trip. Man, the Ritz loves you, San Jose loves that band, and they loved us too. It's been a long history, and he just passed away in his sleep one night. It's kind of and he's one of those musicians that's kind of rare these days. That, you know, when you go outside out back after the show, he's right out there and just constantly talking to people, like, who are asking him questions. So it's always just kind of, you know, he's given this of himself even after performance. And it's just rare when you see that in people. He didn't really want anything from anybody. He just wanted to play music, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he'd settle up and just smile at you, shake your hand, and do it. There was no complaints or none of that stuff. So giving a shout-out to Riley Gale and all the peeps at the Brits and Lisa Lincoln. And to you, Paul Rice, I haven't talked to you in a long time, man. I miss you. Hope you're hanging in and hanging in and hanging in.
Yeah, I am, and I miss you too. And we'll do this again soon, Eric Peterson. You have a good one.
I certainly hope so. Get a hold of me.
I will. Bye, I will. Later.